Jeez. All right. There's that. Hello, we are the Brothers Geek, and this is our podcast, episode number 94, July 5th. Hi, we're brothers.
It is July 5th.
We're Schmaltz Brothers. That's Andrew. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, how you doing?
And then the silent one is Christopher. Hello, Christopher. Did he leave?
Chris Bale the fuck out?
Well, he might have.
No, I did not. I'm here. I was just being the silent one.
Oh, the silent one.
God, you're
it is impossible for you to be silent.
Yes.
Do you not get the stay with me here. That's a funny joke, the silent one. Yes. And then I'm silent.
You have to explain it. It's not a joke.
I see. It's yeah.
Yeah, well, you're not whatever his name is was not following closely enough.
My
name is
Patrick Schmaltz, by the way.
Let's roll.
Yeah. So, like, silence isn't good for podcasting. I don't know if you know this. Come on, bro.
You're right. That's right. That's right. We're pros at this. We gotta fill time. Even if it means syndroming, we have to fill.
Syndrome.
Fill.
Speaking of syndroming,
yeah.
We all saw Incredibles 2, right?
No, let's catch up. It's been a while since we talked to one another. Jesus, you want to jump?
I just
the favorite part, which is the catch up.
I couldn't help it. You segued me.
Andrew stepped on the segue's neck and choked out the segue. The segue is dead because
Chris
doesn't understand segues.
He doesn't understand segues. You gave me a good one, too. I appreciate you.
What does that mean?
Exactly. Yeah. You're the most educated one of us three, and you don't know what a segue is? God, you don't understand.
It's not the thing.
Explain to me like I'm three.
It's not the thing you ride around with the big wheels.
I couldn't understand segue.
Please explain it to me like I'm seven.
Do you remember when they thought segues were going to be like the big thing? Do you think that was like 10 years ago? Now you just see like tourists riding around on them. That's about it.
I saw a Real Sports episode where they sat down with the guy who invented the Segway because he also created a robot building competition.
No, that's the guy who created the Segway killed himself on a Segway.
What?
No, dude, I just watched this.
I watched the same segment on Real Sports. The guy who was a co-inventor of Segway rolled it off. Everybody fact check this, but rolled it off.
I'm serious.
Killed
himself. This is going to the Google machine. Is the inventor of the Segway alive?
Oh my God!
Is the inventor of the Segway dead?
It is a pre-fill, dude.
He rolled off a cliff on his own invention. That's horrible.
He died on a Segway.
That's really bad.
Oh my God! Jimmy Heseldon, born March 27, 1948, died 26 September 2010, was a British entrepreneur, a former coal miner. Made his fortune manufacturing the Hesco Bastion barrier system in 2010. He bought Segway, maker of the Segway personal transport, a Segway vehicle. Okay, so he didn't invent it. He owned the company.
And he didn't.
But he still died on a Segway.
He owned the company and he died on one.
Wow.
That's bad. That's bad luck.
That's just the worst luck possible.
That's the worst luck. Jeez. It's not that Segway, Christopher. It's another Segway.
Dramatic
Segway.
Syndrome.
Syndrome is the villain from
Syndrome, and that directly referenced
Incredibles 1.
Long time listeners.
This is what happens when we don't talk to each other for a month.
It's fine. It's fine.
We're flailing away.
What would you like to talk about,
how
Christopher?
Are you? It's been so long since I talked to you.
Yeah, Pat, how was your shoot, brother? How was working on that show?
You know, it's good. Working for Netflix is fun, and it was a great crew, and it was short little shoot. It was only a month, and that's why we haven't really recorded in a month. I had a great time on it. It was fun.
Did you give Britt Marling my phone number?
I did not.
Did she ask me for your phone number and you denied it?
Yes, I did. I
ruined
she,
my.
She was like,
forever.
She's like, yep. You know, this guy on the internet keeps bugging me. Andrew Schmaltz, are you related to him? Can you tell him to leave me alone? And I said, yeah, I mean, he's my brother, so. I'll do my best.
That's not what you said. You said, I have no idea who the fuck that is.
That's the appropriate response.
That's appropriate response.
That's your job,
yeah.
Patrick.
I was trying to sugarcoat it for Andrew's feelings, Christopher,
oh,
but yes,
yeah,
that's
well,
what I
I'm
said.
I'm not in a sugarcoat. Yeah.
What would you rather have, 12 bullets in the chest or one bullet in the face?
What?
That's a line from Moneyball.
Why?
Either you die. What's better, dying a slow, agonizing death or a quick death? Just give me a quick death.
Oh,
dude.
Okay. You want the quick? You just want the quick death? Okay. I didn't really get the reference, but I get it. Sure.
Just get
sure.
another crappy seg.
Oh my god. So yeah, it was a good shoot, and yeah, I'm kind of sad it's over because I mean a month isn't very long on a shoot, honestly. So it was a good crew too. If it sucked, I'd probably be happy it was over. But yeah, it was fine. Yeah.
Good.
So, how about you guys? What's going on with your lives?
Chris has had a month. Christopher, why don't you go ahead and describe your
I've
month?
I've had multiple months and,
compressed into one month
emotionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. We have been preparing our house to sell in Phoenix.
Yes.
And also at the same time preparing to move into our new house in Tucson.
Yes.
And so every weekend for the last probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 months has been something to do. Mm-hmm. Painting, fixing, cleaning.
Fixing more stuff.
Painting more stuff. So... Susan, all credit to Susan. She has borne the bulk of the tasks. My weekends have been pretty much dominated by painting. I have done a significant portion of the painting on our very high walls and large rooms and shit like that, as Andrew can attest to.
I can.
Patrick as well. We have high walls, high ceilings. Mm-hmm. In multiple rooms. And we painted virtually every room in the house.
Mm-hmm. Christopher has reached the point where the romance of homeownership has completely lost its luster.
I am so done.
Moving
with this
sucks.
Moving sucks.
Moving sucks.
And it's the worst.
Right.
Especially when you live somewhere. They've lived in that house for what, like 15 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so that's...
So we've accumulated a bunch of shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
this
we've
is
been
the
purge purging.
Time. Purge.
We've been packing. We did a full, like, we rented a storage space down here. Andrew was a huge help with this. We moved a load. We rented a U-Haul truck, we loaded it up, we brought it down, we put it into the storage unit down here because the house we're moving into down here in Tucson is about half the size of our house in Phoenix, mainly because it's just going to be Susan and I and our youngest daughter. Our middle daughter will be with us for a month and then during holidays, and she's going to the U of A and living on campus.
Go Cats, bear down.
Go Cats. and our oldest is staying in Metro Phoenix, and so it's just going to be the three of us, and so we're taking the opportunity to downsize. Well, you know, we have a ton of shit,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
This whole process is moving is miserable, prepping your house to sell is freaking miserable,
mm-hmm. And then purging.
So
purging 15 years of collected things.
Yeah. So yeah. We have been doing that for literally the last 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And most recently, though, you had an exhausting / joyous weekend where you went up to legendary listener Sean.
Yes, his daughter was getting married in Colorado Springs, and so we went up there.
Fan of the podcast.
Fan
mm-hmm.
of the podcast, number one fan.
Number one fan, legendary listener.
Number one fan of the podcast.
Yeah.
There's competition for that.
Oh.
And So yes, he was. His daughter was getting married to a fine young man, and we went up there early to assist with preparations, and help them with that. Pretty much, it was all done by the time we got there. But there's always last minute things, and I was happy, very happy, to be Sean's wingman on all of the last minute errands and everything else that needed to be taken care of. And it was a beautiful wedding, and many stories can be told about the fun part of setting up the wedding setup and the chair setup. It was outside, and the weather in Colorado Springs is notoriously changeable, and hadn't rained there for a long time. And then it decided to have a thunderstorm with quarter to dollar size hail.
Whoa.
That was around the location of the wedding. We got heavy rain, and there was it was a very interesting touch and go situation. But we got the wedding in, and nobody got soaked, so it was good.
So, and then there was I have to ask because Cecilia, while we adore her, she is a wonderful cousin to your daughters, and we've known her for forever since she was born.
I've known her forever. Yes.
Yes, she is a bit of a type A focused personality. She is
a highly motivated, focused human.
Exactly.
Very intelligent. Very organized.
Yes.
But also has a wonderful quality about do not sweat too hard about smallish stuff. So,
but in terms of her wedding day and the kerfuffles that inevitably happen on a wedding day, were there any kind of classically, you know, hijinks moments?
He's looking for the bridezilla moment. That's what he's asking about.
no bridezilla. No, like, oh my god, none of that. She is a modern human, who understands that the shit is changeable and not to freak out over things that are out.
That's
not
awesome. That's great to hear.
So it was delayed slightly. There was a false start where we sent everybody out to the chairs. This is hilarious. Sent everybody out to the chairs. There was no rain, and then it started raining, so everybody came back to the porch.
There was a false start.
And then the rain sort of was around us, but not at the location. And so the colonel made the call, and we all went out. And
the colonel.
Nobody got rained on, and the ceremony was beautiful. Kristen sang a song as part of the ceremony with a young gentleman who played the guitar. He was very good. Kristen crushed it, as she normally does, singing a song. And it was a beautiful wedding, and the party was a good time.
Awesome. Wow, I love weddings.
That's weddings.
This past weekend, and then we hung out a couple extra days because we love – Barb and Sean, and love hanging out with them. They are our favorite people in the world, and that was also enjoyable. Sean and I and Kristen and Abby went on this amazing hike that was off of the United States Air Force Academy, and it was rated as difficult hike, and it lived up to its billing. It was hard. My legs were freaking sore.
Nice,
and it's at. It went from 7,300 feet to 9,400 feet.
Whoa!
So
if you're not used to that elevation, that'll get you.
We were breathing. It was good.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. Well, that's great.
Yeah,
that is.
Life is dominated by and the move is 2 weeks from Saturday.
Okay.
Wow.
The shit is real. It's happening.
Shit's real.
Yeah.
That's great.
Finish line is in sight.
Yes.
Anything of note to report, Andrew?
I mean, my month has been pretty straightforward. The month of June is dominated by, you know, air conditioned rooms and staying out of the heat as much as possible, but also, you know, barbecues and pool parties and enjoying the bachelor life of
Arizona life
of an Arizona, you know, man in his mid 30s. If you want to, I could even say upper 30s if you want, late 30s.
Ooh, late 30s.
Well, 37.
Whoa.
I mean, is that late 30s? I think it is.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I you know, a couple minor disappointments. I applied for a job that I didn't get, but that's okay.
I'm sorry,
you know, there's always. you know, always hope on the horizon for new opportunities.
That's the right attitude. That's the right attitude.
What else? I have been watching ridiculous. I think I've, except for the matches that have occurred while I've been at work, I have watched nearly every match of this World Cup.
Oh, wow.
And it has been so fun.
Yeah. I, too, have been trying to watch. I'm recording every single one. And I cannot say that I watched every one, but, man, I've been watching many, many, many of them.
Yeah.
Especially the teams that I like to watch and follow. And, my God, is it fun
who's
to watch.
Your, who's your pick? Who's your pick to win it all?
Of who's left?
Yeah, of who's left.
Mm-hmm. I'm pulling for England. England's always
you think
my
England's going to pull through?
I think my pick is Belgium.
Mm.
Belgium is a very good squad.
Belgium's pretty good.
High quality team.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, they really do. Yeah, I think Brazil is slightly overrated. I mean, they're really good, but they might be a little bit overrated. It could come down to an all European final.
Oh wow!
I think. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's yeah. So that's we'll see. That's
we got
great.
A week left of World Cup, but I've been loving it.
And week left.
Afforded. I need to actually sit down and update the pool because I haven't updated it since we went to Colorado. So
quarterfinals start tomorrow, mm-hmm, so it's mm-hmm. the time. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's been a good month. You know, affording opportunities to lots of socializing and going to bars at the crack of dawn to
yeah.
watch soccer and drink some breakfast beers, which are some of my favorite things to do. So
it's been a lot of fun. It's summer entertainment season.
It is.
That was a segue.
Oh, hey, guys, that was a segue. Oh, okay. So have we all seen Incredibles 2? Because it's summer movie season, everybody. What?
We had a family outing.
We did have a family outing.
In Phoenix / Scottsdale.
That is a movie that we have been looking forward to seeing for a very long time.
I have to say, this is my initial reaction after... I mean, it's been 14 years since Incredibles 1, and I love Incredibles 1. It's a fantastic movie. I was kind of... underwhelmed when I watched it, but as I thought about it and like mulled over it, I realized how good and nuanced it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's really kind of, I guess my expectations were high when I first went to go see it, but the more I thought about it, the more I was like, you know what, that was pretty good. You know, kind of predictable, but like fine. I mean, it doesn't have to be like crazy, but some of the parts were really good, and the focus on Elastigirl and Violet being more the center of the tension versus like the first movie, which I feel like the focus was on Mr. Incredible and Dash had much more like airtime than Violet in the first one, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And this is more focused on Violet and Elastigirl and even Jack-Jack, you know. The scene where Jack-Jack fights the raccoon, oh my god.
I honestly think it's the single most fun I've had at the movies.
Hilarious.
All year.
That sequence. Oh my god.
Is legitimately wonderful.
It's
so fun to watch.
Like Jack-Jack is like this baby who kind of gets it, and he realizes his family is superheroes, and he sees the burglar on the television, and then he sees the raccoon, and he immediately thinks that's like a burglar that he has to fight. Oh my god.
It's so fun.
It's so funny.
I loved the movie. I thought it was tremendously entertaining.
Yeah.
I think that it suffers a tiny little bit, and we talked about this with other sequels that especially it was part of our podcast when we talked about Deadpool 2. Mm. That Deadpool 2 was such a breath of fresh air, and it was so original.
Yeah.
That Deadpool 2 kind of suffers a tiny little bit because it can't be as original as the first.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is true, I think, for Incredibles 2 as well. It just can't be as groundbreaking. And that's part of what made Incredibles 1 so good. It was an animated film with this fully realized dynamic family with all these different relationships who happen to have superpowers living in this kind of Art Deco world, 1960s throwback world,
mm-hmm.
but has all of these layers of men and women's roles and, you know, ordinary versus extraordinary and living up to your potential and what does that mean and, you know, feeling how you know, all the ideas of masculinity that Mr. Incredible dealt with in the first one. And, you know, in this one, Elastigirl is definitely the focus. It's her story. She is the hero driving the plot. You get to see much more of how she's a detective force. I mean, Mr. Incredible is a guy who breaks down walls.
Yeah, he's invulnerable and he just punches big things. But she's like, she has to be like smarter. She has to be clever.
She's much more clever. She's much more of a detective.
Yeah.
The nature of her powers make it so that that's more of her kind of avenue of being a superhero. But at the same time, she's able to accomplish amazing stuff with her powers. And I love the use of her powers and how she saves people.
The use of the powers with the bike, so
great.
Like her, using her momentum to pull her, like launch herself over things and through buildings and stuff.
That's so cool.
Was
really cool.
That was really well done. She's kind of a side character too, but I feel like she got a lot of airtime too because of her connection with Elastigirl was the character of Void, where there's an X-Men with the same power. She's in Days of Future Past. Blink, where she creates like a portal. She doesn't necessarily like teleport herself. She creates a portal and things can go through it. And using that kind of power and her fighting Violet with Violet's powers was really really interesting. Fight.
There was a lot of original and. When we watch, it's a good superhero movie, you see the powers that are being used, and they're used in an original, interesting way.
A clever way, right. It's not everything you've seen before. It's a new idea on it.
So the movie worked on multiple levels. The feminist idea of it, the idea of, you know, had the women in the story having much more agency than they did in the first movie, Violet becoming much more of an adult character, her arc in terms of, you know, her independence and her standing up to her father and not allowing her father or pushing back on her father, just trying to fix everything for her and letting her have more of her own identity and agency. I think that was great. If anything, the villain was a little bit weak. I mean, Syndrome is such a classic villain. I mean, we reference him almost every podcast. The villain, I mean, she was interesting in her own way. She just had a little bit of she wasn't as kind of standouting. She didn't kind of pop as much.
So I have a comment about that. So I've been reading on the internet that Syndrome is fandom of superheroes gone wrong. And he's like a comic book fan that's gone too far. And
he's basically the internet.
Right. But she is the internet in this movie, and how it can go how the snake is eating the tail kind of thing. She's she hates superheroes, but she's using them to her own end, and she hates the focus on if only we had gotten to the button to save the superheroes would have come to save us, but. She's like, no, you should have just stayed in the panic room kind of a thing. And
she doesn't like the idea of relying on super. She's almost anti-hero.
Yeah.
But in the sense that she doesn't feel we need them. Syndrome wants to be a superhero.
Exactly. I love thinking about the two of them as these
ends of the spectrum.
They're different ends of the spectrum. One loves superheroes and wants to be them, and feels scorned.
The problem, really, the only problem with this movie is that the villain's villainy is muddled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
in Incredibles 2, because it's it's this self-reliance sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's also this anti-superhero. We shouldn't rely on superheroes, but then she's part of the effort to highlight the fact that superheroes are helpful in that there's going to be a villain who attacks people, and what the villain does cannot be stopped by anything but a superhero kind of a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the problem with all of that is that it's not a crystal clear message in my mind about what is your point. Because it's this empowering. The effort there is this trying to be empowering in terms of non-powered beings. And that's similar to the messaging of the first one, except the first one is more straightforward in terms of his motivations very clear. Where the issue with Incredibles 2 that I found was that villain was muddled. It's a mixed bag.
No, I can see that, for sure.
And you know, when the first time you see her, maybe it's just me. It is a kid's movie, but the first time I saw her on screen, I was like, villain. But like, it's just like not even a. Oh, sorry, spoilers. Like, I guess I'm giving away part of the plot. But
it's been out for almost a month.
It's been on. Yeah, true. So I apologize if I'm ruining for anybody. But it's a really good movie, so you should go see it regardless.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I don't think it was that obvious. I mean,
oh, I don't think it was.
I thought it was the smarmy guy.
I thought
it was the brother.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that. I mean, definitely on the nose that they wanted you to think that. But like the amount of time she spent with her. Getting to know her, they're sitting around like talking to each other, you know, getting like, I'm like, this, there's no way they're getting to know this, introducing this character, and she doesn't turn out to be the villain. Like,
I don't
that's
know about that. I think that could have been part of the very clear sort of empowering messaging that she was supportive of Elastigirl and the efforts around Elastigirl, and it would have been cliche.
Yes, if he was the hero. Yes, if he was the villain, it would have been very
to be
cliche.
The villain.
Yes.
So I love the fact that it was they did not go for the easy cliche of course he's the villain. No, I thought that was nicely done because the storyline was. She's helping her, you know, this other female be empowered.
Sure.
And be part of the team. And
but
they
guess
were
what?
Close.
But guess what? She's not.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I thought that aspect of the story was strong in that it was not lazy. And that, you know, that Pixar isn't lazy. So
no, they're never
good,
lazy.
Good on them. So.
Yeah.
I mean, beautifully animated. Really fun set
it
pieces.
Looked awesome.
It looked like it should look. It looked like it happened in the same. You know.
Yeah.
It
didn't look. It didn't. Right.
The
it didn't
technology
look crazy.
Is 14 years more advanced.
Right.
And it looked improved. I mean, it looked improved.
But it not too
cleaner.
Improved that the other one looks like crap. You know, compared to it, it definitely looked cleaner, sharper. There are more layers, like showing.
But it had an interesting. I don't know. Right. You guys tell me, but I love the fact that it had that. Subtle, like, stylized look was the first one was really well animated, realistic, but this one had a Patrick, you may be able to articulate this better than me, but I love the subtle stylized look that it had. It wasn't as realistic as the first one. It wasn't like, okay, we're trying to recapture realism here. It was a little bit off in terms of that realism, and I love that about
Are you talking about the setting or like character animation?
No, I'm talking about all of it. The look of it wasn't I can't articulate it, but it was just a touch more stylized than the first one in terms of
totally.
I agree with you on that
kind of thing.
Just more of a focus on, you know, the 50s aspects and the outfits, all the costumes having like a distinct look and all the characters looking differently, and you know,
and I love
yeah,
that
it was just,
mashup.
It's just that there was the way that they animated it, its look just struck me as really interesting and well done.
Totally.
Yeah.
And no, it's, I agree. It was it's really subtle, but I thought it was really, really good.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Yep. So, moving on. Christopher hasn't seen Jurassic World 2. Are you planning on seeing Jurassic World 2,
yes,
Christopher?
I am going to
should
see it.
Should we wait, or should we talk about it a little bit?
You guys can talk about it. Just don't, I mean,
don't,
I think
we're not going to blow it up. We're trying not to spoil it too much. But
yeah, it's just out, so don't spoil it too
yeah,
much.
Yeah, yeah. We saw Jurassic World Fallen out. Kingdom. Is it Jurassic World 2 Fallen Kingdom?
It's Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
It's just
no
Jurassic
World.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. Yeah, they've been doing that lately. But what did you think of this movie, Andrew? It's technically
so
Jurassic
me,
Park
me,
6, 5? 5 or 6? 5.
Now, let me, someone who hasn't seen it, does the trailer seems to be messing with timeline. Is that accurate? That
no.
There's sequences that are like out of order, or
well,
it's not showing.
There's a flashback element to the story, but it's not jarring. Or
what
anything.
What
you
flashback
don't lose.
Element are you talking about? I don't
well,
remember.
Well, they tell the early stories of how Owen and Blue bond.
Oh
they,
yeah. There's they, that. It, that's more just like told through it, videos,
but,
like they were recording
it's
videos.
Set up,
yeah,
the trailer seems to set up the idea that the movie is about going to the island. When that's sort of a that's not exactly it. That they get off the island. Right?
This movie is split into two. I'll say this. There's
definitely a first half and
no
a second
spoilers,
half.
Right. No
spoilers.
No spoiling, yeah, yeah. But like there's definitely two distinct things happening in this.
I mean,
this.
The trailer takes advantage of the idea that that's a huge awesome set piece is
exactly
going to the island that's erupting.
Right.
Yeah, the volcano erupts and they're trying to get the animals off.
Yeah.
And that is a good chunk of the movie, but that's not all of the movie.
Right. There's still like an hour left after that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of that. I think that's kind of my problem with the movie, honestly, is it doesn't have this like nice arc. It has this, when it goes, it's going, but it's sort of, I don't like that they left the island. It's kind of, everything like happens after that is kind of okay for me. It's like, okay, and then, well, this is not as interesting. You know, I was hoping more of that was dealing with what's on the island and you're going out on your own and you have to run around in a world of dinosaurs that have been thriving for years without you. You know, I think that's more interesting, but then that's not what happens. It's sort of, they move that plot along very quickly, and get to the point very fast. So this movie is a retelling of Jurassic Park, The Lost World. So it's similar kind of a thing. They're trying to get the dinosaurs off the island, and there's a group that wants to take the dinosaurs and sell them for their own ends, and then there's a group that wants to help the dinosaurs and you know, prevent the other group. So it's basically that same plot, just kind of told in a little different way. And it's fine. It's kind of just meh, to be honest.
Is that your view?
I wasn't over the moon about the movie. Jurassic World, the first one, was so filled with such nostalgia touch points.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jurassic Park, the first one, I mean, that came out in 1993 it came out when I was 12 years old. That was the first movie I ever waited in line for. It was the first movie I ever remember like being so off the charts excited to see. And I have vivid memories of the first time I ever watched it, of being terrified and amazed and all of those emotions. I am deeply connected with Jurassic Park in that way. And, you know, it definitely continues that. There's some real deep emotional moments.
Well, and Jurassic Park, the original, holds up. You watch it now and you're like, those special effects still look good.
Oh, they still look awesome.
Yeah, I mean.
It was groundbreaking.
It was groundbreaking. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
This movie takes the franchise in a totally different direction. Like where I was not, I don't, It was entertaining. It was fun. Chris Pratt is always fun to watch.
Yeah, Bryce all those Dallas things Howard are really good.
Fun.
Yeah, the script is fun. Chris Pratt's fun, but like Bryce Dallas Howard was so underutilized in this. Like,
she's just a tremendous actress. And
she's a really good actress, but her whole role in this movie is like girl running. Like and
I think she has more agency than that. She
has
think
no
she
arc.
Does.
She has no arc at all. Like, ugh.
There's no what?
She has no character arc the whole movie. Like, none of them really do. I mean, sort of Chris Pratt going through the, like, you know, trying to save Blue because he cares about Blue.
Oh, no, they don't. I mean, none of them learn anything.
None of them learn a damn thing.
They don't uncover any truths about themselves.
Right,
or, like,
exactly.
You know,
or
learn
or,
a lesson.
Yeah, there's no lesson or... Yeah, it's just sort of... They're the same when they go through the events. Yeah.
And they come out the other side.
That's it.
And they're basically the same, in my opinion. But I had a good reaction to the movie. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was fun. I don't feel an overwhelming need to go see it in the theater again.
No. No way.
Yeah, I still want to see Incredibles 2 again. I saw Infinity War twice. I really enjoy a movie where I feel like I can watch it again right away.
Totally.
Like, if I really connect with it and I like it a lot, I feel like I can watch it right away and I won't be bored. I really don't have a huge desire to see it again.
So part of my gripe with this movie, too, is, and this is probably nitpicking and, no, and like, you can be mad at me if you want, but that's fine. I love film scores. I love film scores, and they don't use the original Jurassic Park film score. It's this new score, and I do not like it.
They use the iconic song. You hear some of it.
It touchstone moments, like, or when they're referencing something that happened in the past. But it's its own score. It's its own thing, and it's
a different kind of. It's not as the movie is less a soaring kind of.
Yes,
you know, majestic.
But,
it has less of that.
We're not awed by the dinosaurs anymore.
We're not awed by the dinosaurs
anymore. Where you are, there's very direct callbacks to the very first Jurassic Park. The guy who made this movie, J.A. Bayona, he absolutely put in there very direct callbacks to the first movie. Because I get the feeling he's a guy who's like my age, who experienced the movie when he was, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And it, like, exploded his mind when it comes to filmmaking, because there are almost direct lifts of shots. The first in Jurassic Park, when they're driving through the plane and they first encounter the Brachiosaurus, and it's as tall as a tree, and it's like you hear the huge trumpet that it makes, music comes up.
But the music is like, so not fitting. Like, it's not.
Hold on. Let me get to my point.
Okay, all right.
God, there's that, but there's almost that exact shot in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom where you encounter a Brachiosaurus, and it pulls on that nostalgia a little bit, but it also has the tinge of, you know what, this park has fallen down around everybody's heads, and this is a failure, and we're trying to pick up the pieces and help these animals survive something that's, you know, we have a responsibility for them. So it has that darker edge to it. It's not as majestic as Jurassic Park was. And part of that is it doesn't utilize the music the same way. It just doesn't. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, there's just scenes where they're like climbing around on this mansion roof, and it's like this operatic like music happening, and it's so not fitting, and like I don't even know what I was supposed to feel at that moment. Like like the music doesn't tell you what, and that is a huge flaw. If they had some good John Williams, like, I know John Williams is like 900 years old right now, so you can't get him to make movies anymore, but it needed something like that to, like, this is tense. There's this tense moment. And like the opera was not doing it for me. That's like nitpicky, but for me that loves film scores, it bothered me a lot. So
we all can agree that the Jurassic Park theme is iconic.
It's just iconic. It's
just like
beautiful.
The Superman theme, just like the Star Wars theme.
Yes.
And they all come from John Williams. The Indiana Jones theme. He's written the most iconic film scores ever.
Oh, yeah. Like, and 70s to 90s were John Williams writing music for for film scores, and he was just slaying it. And that's like my formative years. You know, those are the years I was watching film, and I don't know. So it just didn't.
Christopher, go see the movie and go see it in the theater.
Yeah.
You'll really like it.
It's a popcorn movie. It's okay. I agree. Go see it in the theaters, because the volcano stuff is really cool. Some of the dinosaur sequences, the scene where they fall in the ball into the water, and like he's trying to break them out, and it's basically like one uncut thing, even though they definitely cut, but it's supposed to look like that. Really interesting scene. So
really tense. Yeah.
Really tense. Really good. And so I don't know. It's not.
I'm definitely gonna see it.
Absolutely see it.
Definitely, definitely not perfect, but definitely not terrible either. That's what I'm saying, I guess. Yeah. So you guys have some television finales to talk about, so I'll let you guys.
Summer is the time that TV
summer is the time
comes to its. It wraps up its seasons. The two big finales that I think we can talk about. Patrick, you're not caught up on The Expanse or Westworld, right?
Correct. I'm still watching past episodes. I haven't finished them. So try to talk about them.
We can't spoil
lightly.
Or anything because, you know, the Westworld season is so twisty and turny and has so many huge reveals.
Yeah,
I don't even know what the hell's going on half the time.
The last episode I watched from Westworld was the samurai episode, and let me tell you, that episode is not what I wanted for where I was feeling, because I was like on the fence about the show already, and then they did nothing for a whole episode, and it bothered the shit out of me. I haven't watched anything since, because it's like, what is the show? What are you doing? Nothing's happening. Nothing's happening. Get to the point.
I'm telling you right now, there are episodes. There's an episode coming up where it focuses on a host who's part of the Ghost Nation, the native tribe that's inside the park.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's legitimately fantastic.
That's a really, really well done episode.
Yeah, it's great television, Patrick.
All right. I have to at least get there. Like
that episode kind of made the season for me.
There's like 10. Is there 10 episodes in this season?
Nine or 10. Yeah.
Eight? Nine? Okay. I'm at five. I just need. Yeah, I just need to power
through.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
I'll power through.
Christopher, what did you think of the finale of Westworld and how it ended?
It doesn't do anything for the longest time. There's a lot of navel gazing to lead up to. To lead up to sort of what they were trying it to be, this profound moment. I appreciated the art of it all. We've talked about this before. Make less episodes if you're feeling like you got to fill. And there was some of that, like in the grand scheme of things. There is no point to the Ghost Nation episode.
No.
In terms of the overall narrative.
No.
And then the final resolution struck me as, really?
Yeah.
That's the choice you're making? In terms of a resolution to deal with the hosts?
People on the internet have been talking about it being this big thing at the end. Is there a big thing at the end of
there's
this?
A big thing at the end.
There's a big,
finale,
like, twist or
finale,
spoiler?
There's tons of shit that happens.
Okay, okay.
And there's also a after credits scene, which, you know, causes more questions than provides answers.
Yep.
And so all of that, I like the final episode simply because it progressed things forward and there was a resolution and there was okay, next step. But sort of getting there, this season was a decidedly mixed bag of up and down, and what is the point? Get to it already. So there's a lot of moments like that where I'm like, oh, yeah, come on.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they could have been tighter in their storytelling, for sure.
I agree.
I was all psyched about that Shogun world, and there's just it was just kind of a nothing. Let's just show some samurai. Let's have some fun with the samurai.
Right. Like, that was part of it. It was fun, but, like, nothing happened. You got to still progress. I feel like they had a really good plot for season one, and they knew what they were doing. And then this season, like, nothing's happening. Like, everything is, it's just, we're just kind of tiptoeing around stuff that we talked about in season one.
And the big ideas that they're trying to examine, they don't really fully examine and tease out what the implications are.
They don't land that well.
They hint at it. They sort of dance around it. They don't, like, it's like, come on. You're too subtle by half. Why? Mm-hmm. You don't have to do that.
I understand being purposefully obtuse, but at the same time, it's like, we talked about this weeks ago when we were talking about where it was in the middle of the season. If it doesn't pay off, it's just going to land with a thud, and some of it paid off and some of it really didn't. It's a mixed bag for sure. I think the mystery and the core idea of the show is so strong that it'll keep me coming back, and it's incredibly well-made television.
Oh yeah. So it's beautiful. Like the Western parts of it are great.
No problem.
Yeah.
Unless they just ridiculously jump the shark sometime in season three where, you know, the hosts end up going to space or something and fighting aliens.
Hosts in space fighting aliens.
Alien world. Exactly. They end up, you know, the skin jobs or whatever. They end up fighting aliens. But anyway.
Well, that's Blade Runner, dude. That's Blade Runner.
Blade Runner. I was just watching the beginning of Blade Runner 2049.
Dude, that movie is so good. Right?
But yeah, no, Westworld finale, just, you know, watch it out, Patrick.
All right.
Life is too short in my mind. If you're not feeling it, you don't have to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll wait until I have nothing better to do or I don't know. Like, I'd rather watch something that is fun. I'm really not excited about it. Yeah.
Like, I kind of want to watch things that are fun and exciting, things that aren't hard right now.
Yeah.
For some reason,
well,
the world sucks.
The room is burning around us, and when I want to watch entertainment, I want to be entertained. I don't want to be reminded that everything is miserable and shitty.
Right.
Shitstorm.
Sometimes you need a little bit of an escape.
I need fun. I need superheroes punching other superheroes. That's what I need.
Which is why, you know, Infinity War has made like $900 billion something like that. Some ridiculous.
I don't think I'm alone. People want adventure. I want a fun adventure movie. I want fun adventure shows.
I want good comedy. I want clever scripts.
I want fun and lightheartedness. Jesus, is that
Ant-Man and the Wasp comes out today.
That's what I'm saying. I'm so excited to see that. Oh, I'm going to see it tomorrow.
I'm also excited for Mission Impossible.
That looks fun too.
Where Henry Cavill and Tom Cruise fight the guy in the bathroom. And Henry Cavill just starts wailing on the guy.
Dude, he's a beast,
that
man.
That part of the trailer looks so awesome.
He's a beast, man. I'll watch it just for that. Man. I love Henry Cavill. You follow him on Instagram? Great. I love Henry Cavill on Instagram.
Yeah, he's a really fun.
He's like
he's a really fun
and
guy.
Funny and yeah, I like. He's got a big old like beast dog.
That, he's got some like 125 pound like mastiff or something.
Yeah, it's something hilarious. Insane, what's his yeah? Dog. What's his name? His dog's name? I can't remember.
So is it Kal-El? I think he named it after.
Did he name it Kal-El? That's pretty good.
Because I think he got it right around the time that Man of Steel dropped or something like that, or maybe when Batman versus Superman came out. But like it references Superman in some way.
Let me see.
So the other big finale that happened is The Expanse, and Patrick's not caught up on that. It's very closely tied to what happens in the books, so it's not a huge spoiler to say that Pat, you've read up to the end of Abaddon's Gate, right?
No, I don't think I read Abaddon. Wait, I read Cybola Burn. which is them.
So they've gone through the gates.
They went to the gate, and the end of that book is them going through. And I started Abaddon, or the next one, which is them through the gate on the other planet, and that's yeah, but I didn't get that deep into it.
Okay, we're not spoiling it for you. Yeah, they end up going through the protomolecule ring gate. There's the adventure inside there where they have to figure out kind of the mechanics of it and save themselves.
Well, that's a crazy book because like the gate like messes with that ship, the big ship that they take out there.
Oh yeah, no. Well, there's rules of the ring space that they have to learn and not to be a threat to the protomolecule. Anyway, so season ends with all the ring gates opening. So wherever they go for season four, it is very clear that they're going to venture through the gates.
So this season, the one that just ended, ends with them the end of that book. So they're opening the gates up. Is what you're saying? Okay, but they don't go through in this season. That's the end of the season.
Uh huh.
Okay. So yeah, so I've read up until what's happened. So
yeah, and season four is going to be on Amazon Prime, and I got to get Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of the crazy story about this is like they canceled the show midway through the season, and Amazon Prime picked it up, which is fantastic because I mean it's a really good show. I just been busy with other things, not watching it, and I feel kind of bad about it. You know, like I'm the only one not watching it or something, but I feel like a lot of people are not watching it, so.
Christopher, what did you think of the finale?
It's a great show. The finale was excellent. Pays off all the storylines, the key storylines that are in the books up to that point. It pays off. I felt Clarissa Mao got a little bit short shrift. I would have liked a little bit more development of that storyline and some more detail. But even that, I think, was pretty well done. It's definitely a fantastic sci-fi TV series. So I'm
fantastic, yeah.
Incredibly happy that it got picked up for another season because it'll be interesting to see what they do in terms of the next season because the next season – I think there's a time jump, right? In the books, there's a time jump that allows
I think
for
it's like 10 years later, isn't it?
Colonies to be established on these other planets.
It's not
right?
10, but it's a couple. Yeah. Like, there's in the colony that they go and visit in the fourth book, Cibola Burn, is that the name of the
I can't remember. I think I'm confusing the two. So it's Abaddon's Gate and Cibola Burn might be the fourth book. I think
so. And then there's an even bigger jump later on, but there's a time jump to allow for the development of colonies, early development of colonies. And so it's an interesting story, but it's actually, frankly, my least favorite book. And so what I'm hoping is that they combine that book with the next one.
Well, they did that with Caliban's War and Abaddon's Gate. That was definitely most of season three was the tail end of Caliban's War and
I hope they combine the next two books into a season. So
I agree. So it ended very strong. I mean, the show is great. I'm glad it's picked up.
Yep.
And now, you know, much like the long wait between Game of Thrones seasons, now we have like, you know, 8 months or something until we'll see more. Expanse episodes.
I just want to comment because we're not all finished, right? But we're all watching Luke Cage season 2 on Netflix. So so maybe we push that to the next episode to discuss that until we're all done.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are definitely, watching it.
Definitely enjoying season 2 of Luke Cage.
Luke Cage is great. It's so fun.
I really have been liking Bushmaster as a villain. He's fun.
Oh, yeah,
I really enjoy
because
him
he's not straight up evil. He is you can understand and actually appreciate his motivations
completely.
And I love that about
and he goes toe to toe.
Has been strong. Luke Cage.
He goes toe to toe with Cage. Yeah, and he's got a style and a swagger to him that's different from Cage's. But they're their equals in their kind of their coolness. It's pretty. It's great. Well, it's a lot. He's a lot of fun.
What I love about Luke Cage is it's kind of like this, like, blaxploitation '70s like detective story kind of a thing. Like he's you know, he's like this. He's like Shaft, kind of. He's
a little bit,
that,
yeah.
You know, he's got this cool look, and he's known throughout town, and he.
Well,
you know,
it's also
the music
that,
and
it's a lot more empowering.
Right,
it
right.
Is, no, it is
totally.
It is so like I've read a couple of articles about this.
The style is fantastic, is what I'm saying.
The style of the show is fantastic, but it is so completely like black. It is a black world full of black people, black culture, and it is great.
Totally,
because it's. They are who they are, and it's the world that they're in, and it is fully realized and deep. And as a white guy watching a TV show that's just it's about black people with superheroes, it's great.
I think
it's fantastic.
And the touchstone of it's an interesting time we live in, where you know white dudes are shooting black men across the country right now in real life. The idea of this black man that is bulletproof. Is kind of, and they're playing on that and this interesting idea of what that means, and like it's this complicated cultural problem.
White psyche sort of threat, and you know, there's a lot of layers to it that's commentary on America, right now. It's really well done, in my view.
It is really well done.
Yeah,
so.
I'm having fun with it, but I'm only a few in, so
I'm 10.
Yeah, keep at it. Keep at it. It's really good.
Keep
I'll
at it.
Finish it tonight.
Oh, good.
And the way that they hopefully when you get finished with it, I very much appreciated that it was not a. How should I say this? The ending is not cliche.
Okay. Like it.
Yeah.
Oh, I will say this, Patrick, you're not there yet, but Danny Rand shows up, and it's the best version of Iron Fist we've seen.
It really resets him, and they get him right.
They get him totally right. They get the relationship between the two of them right. These totally different people that love and trust each other. They get it.
See, that's how it should be.
Iron Fist right. They finally get him
right.
Dude,
I like Iron Fist. Season one is so uneven and poo that I like watched it and tried to like and he's better
in the Defenders.
He's better in the Defenders. Yeah, totally.
He's getting there. This version of Iron Fist that comes in Luke Cage is the best version.
They're probably
seen.
Not going to do
so
another cool. Iron Fist series, are they? Like,
I think they are.
Really?
They're doing another season. Yeah.
Okay. I hope they do.
I still can't get over the fact that they don't animate the glow around his.
Oh, I know.
It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
It's the biggest mistake they made.
Oh, I wish they would do that, but I know it's going to cost extra money.
It's so much extra money.
Well, God damn.
And they try to like make it. This world is kind of dumb. This world is kind of like more subtle, like more, you know. Like
it's just no,
straightforward.
We can go off on this.
Right,
it just doesn't look good as fans of the
character. Mystical glowy shit around the
fist. It should be like you should clench his fist, and it should look like dragon fire coming out.
Totally.
Yes.
What it should be.
So I'd like to talk about something I'm rewatching and re-listening to. I have Audible credits, and I've been. Uh-huh. listening to the Harry Potter series.
From the beginning.
I'm starting it off, and I'm watching the movies as I listen.
Have you only read the books once?
No. I've read them before, but it's been years, you know? It's been like 10 years, you know? I haven't touched the books. And okay. So I think I've read
the Harry Potter books all the way through the series, maybe three times a piece.
Yeah.
I end up going back every couple
maybe
of years.
I think I've done twice. This is probably the third listen or third. Like I read them before and I've never listened to them. So this is my first time listening. I bought book one just kind of on a whim, just like, oh, I got this credit. I might as well buy something. So I bought it and I listened to it. And now I'm hooked. Now I'm like, oh man, this series is so good, and you start to understand like the arc and the stuff that's going on in the world and what she's doing. And you know, I am convinced that Hermione Granger is a super genius, and she just like remembers everything and is not, she's not as powerful as Harry. So I don't know. I've been having these like thoughts about what this series is and what she's trying to say and like the reflection on it that I've been having. The movies and what's your favorite Harry Potter book? Let's start with that. Where's your favorite book?
Probably Goblet of Fire.
Goblet of Fire is so good, right?
I think Goblet of Fire. Yeah.
I'm listening to Prisoner of Azkaban right now, so I haven't gotten to Goblet of Fire, but Goblet of Fire is amazing. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Christopher, what's your favorite one?
I think my favorite is Half-Blood Prince.
Oh yeah, that's really good too.
That's when it really gets mature. That's when the series really gets mature.
I think that's my favorite one.
You start to so something that I'm realizing re-listening and re-watching like these back to back is Snape was never evil. Like, he's kind of just
a dick.
He's kind of just a dick to Harry the whole time. But, like, he is good. No,
the complexity of Severus Snape is...
But he never does anything bad. It's just Harry's perspective of him is him being a dick to him, so he doesn't trust him. But like,
That's how a child would think about it.
He doesn't trust him... But like he's a member of the Order of the Phoenix, and he's trusted by Dumbledore. He's trusted by Lupin. He's trusted by like all these other characters are like, you don't know what you're talking about, kid. Like, you need to trust us, and we trust him. And they're right. I mean, he ends up killing Dumbledore, but Dumbledore told him to do it. So I don't know. It's
really a tremendous series.
It's really good, and it's fun. And so I've been having fun watching, listening, and watching, and the rewatches. Oh,
that's awesome. That's quality effort. That's quality time.
Right, right.
So how are you structuring your? So you're listening to Prisoner of Azkaban. Have you watched the movie again already?
No. I have watched the first two, and I have. Listen, I'm in the middle of Prisoner of Azkaban, so when I'm finished, I'll watch it.
Oh, okay, but, you watch it in my order. Okay.
But like, from what I remember, Prisoner of Azkaban is the best movie. Like, the best made movie.
Oh, yeah. Alfonso Cuarón did that movie. Yeah. He's wonderful.
Right. I mean, nothing against David Yates, who does... He does
5, 6, 7, and 8.
He does... Yeah, he does Order of the Phoenix... And
Half-Blood Prince,
and then both Deathly Hallows, and then he did Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So he's a pretty good director, but Alfonso Cuarón is just so good. So
he adds. I mean, Chris Columbus doing the first two movies. They're definitely kids movies.
Oh yeah.
Alfonso Cuarón definitely rounds out.
And they grow up so fast. Oh my god! Like the jump between the first two, puberty happens.
You can be
puberty
a girl
has
kid,
them, dude.
And then you were a 13-year-old young man.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So I'm excited to see the big jump, because I mean the first two movies they are children, but
That's time well spent, buddy.
Yeah. No, I'm having fun with it. It's just sort of like this like. Side project. Are you guys reading anything of note, something you want to comment on?
Not really. I'm waiting for books to come out in the series that I follow, so I'm kind of in a bit of a lull. I have a Rat Queens volume 4 that I purchased for myself that I picked up, and I was reading a few pages of last night. I'm trying to remember where the story was and like picking it up again.
Four ends with them fighting the Cthulhu monster coming out of the sky, and then four is kind of like they're celebrating, and it's a reset of the story.
A little bit, yeah. So that's I'm getting into that, so I'm digging on that.
Oh, I did read. I finally read Civil War II in the comics, where it's like Captain Marvel fighting Iron Man. Basically, is the plot. You know, people were ripping on it pretty hard, but I kind of liked it. There's some interesting ideas about seeing the future, and because the conflict comes from this hero that can see the future and whether they should prevent or arrest people who are, this guy says is going to do a bad thing before
that's
it happens.
But that's a Minority Report.
It's a Minority Report like kind of thing, but half the heroes are saying we should listen to this guy. This guy's preventing like world-ending catastrophes, and the other half is saying you can't arrest people until they actually do something. So it's kind of this. I like that part of it, and the art is really good in it. So I don't know. I didn't hate it, I guess.
Are you done with it?
I finished it, yeah.
Did it finish stronger than the first Civil War? I mean, the first Civil War was great, but then it just kind of wrapped
up
in kind of a meh kind of way.
Right. It doesn't have a big pop, if that's what you're asking. There is something that was... there's a resolution, but Marvel was kind of afraid to kill somebody. A character that is, for all intents and purposes, he's dead. But he's not really dead. And so I wish they would have just killed him and grow some balls, you know? That's my thought. Because like Civil War should have ended with Captain America getting shot while he's going to court. That's how it
that
should have
been
ended.
The end. That should not that, have been
right.
Captain America 25. That
exactly.
Been the
exactly.
End of Civil War.
It should have been him getting shot on his way to the courtroom. That should have been the end of the series. And they were afraid to do that there too. So I don't know. This, but what I really like about it is with all this Captain Marvel discussion from Infinity War, and her movie coming out, she's kind of like a big central character in the story. And so I liked reading it because she's such a big part, and her conflict with Iron Man is the center of the book. So I don't know. I liked it for those reasons, I guess.
Oh yeah, no, I'm very excited for the Captain Marvel movie. That's March.
Right. Brie Larson, Captain Marvel. It's gonna be
hell yeah.
It's gonna be awesome.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Christopher, are you reading anything that you wanna talk about?
Yes. I am listening to a recent release from Jim Butcher called Brief Cases. They are short stories of the Dresden, in the Dresden universe.
Oh, yeah. The Dresden stuff is so good.
Yeah. Couple new stories that are in this collection while we wait for the next main Dresden book to come out called Peace Talks. No date yet on when that book will be out, but in the meantime, Briefcases is out, and it's a collection of short stories, and I'm listening to that currently on Audible. And I also just finished reading a book I highly recommend, Patrick, especially you, because you are in the film world, and the name of the book is called Space Odyssey.
Oh.
Stanley Kubrick, Arthur C. Clarke, and The Making of a Masterpiece.
Oh, shit.
This is a book by Michael Benson. Space Odyssey is the name of the book. Michael Benson is the author. It is a book all about the making of 2001 A Space Odyssey, the movie.
Oh, wow.
It also contains it also details the making of and the writing of the book, because that was happening at the same time. They were working together to both write the story of the movie as well as Arthur C. Clarke writing the novel and getting input from Stanley Kubrick at the same time. And it's a backstory about, mainly focused on the making of the movie, but also sprinkled in it is the frustrations
that Arthur C. Clarke had as it relates to the writing of, finishing of, and release of the novel. And uh-huh. It is a wonderful tale, and the level of detail about the groundbreaking nature of the filmmaking of 2001, A Space Odyssey, which I did not have an appreciation of. I love the movie and have appreciated it as a thing of art. But, Patrick, you need to read this for the insight into the shit that they did to create the shots that they did. You will probably understand it a lot more than I understood it. You know, I'm reading it and sort of basically following what it is they're doing and why there is – why it was groundbreaking in terms of the special effects and how they were doing it and shit like that, because this was made in the 60s, right?
Sure. They did some crazy stuff. From what I know,
it's a fascinating book. I enjoyed it a lot. And I enjoyed it that much more because Tucson's Loft Cinema, because to celebrate, it is the 50th anniversary of the movie. It was released in 1968.
Oh, wow.
2001, A Space Odyssey, the movie, the Loft Cinema showed a 70mm big screen here in Tucson, and so I went to see that and watched it in theater and on screen, it is incredible how it holds up.
In 70 millimeter, that sounds amazing.
A masterpiece of science fiction filmmaking. Awesome.
With the music and like the big screen like that, I would love to see it just in 35 millimeter. Because I saw it on video like much, much later. But seeing
if
it at
you
a
have
theater,
an opportunity to see 2001, A Space Odyssey in the theater, you need to do it. Find it.
Yeah.
If they're showing it at some anniversary event or whatever commemoration, go do it. I did that. They were showing it all week last week, and so I went one of the nights, and I'm so happy I did because it is an incredible piece of film. So.
That's awesome.
That's very cool.
I've never seen. I mean, I haven't had the opportunity. I don't think it's shown. Maybe that Harkins, like Classic Night at the Movies, has shown it, and I just haven't figured it. I haven't like paid attention.
You've seen
it,
2001 though, right?
Oh, I've seen it, yeah.
Okay.
It's been years, but I've never seen it on a big screen is what I'm saying. I only
saw it the once. It's kind of just like...
I saw it as a younger kid. Like, I probably watched it when I was in high school.
And you were bored. I'm sure that you, when you watched it 100%. As a younger kid, you were like,
the scene in space where he's like flying around and... Yeah, dude, that's like 45 minutes long.
There is... And the book really goes into the art of it, all of that, and why Kubrick is – the choices he was making, what he was trying to – it's really, really fascinating.
I love
read
that.
The book
that sounds great.
And watch the book.
Yeah. Say the name of the book again.
Space Odyssey.
Okay.
Stanley Kubrick, Arthur C. Clarke, and The Making of a Masterpiece. Michael Benson.
I will totally listen to that. I'm going to download it because I have some credit. I have some credits that I need to spend. So that's great. Should we talk about Destiny or should we wait for the next time because we're running a little long?
Oh, I have just a brief story because I think it's a little fun.
Okay.
And I was playing. I got quests that I. And this is just so bad. This week, Arc Singe, so Arc weapons and abilities add extra damage.
Mm-hmm.
And Grenadier, where you know your grenades recharge faster, which is totally both those add a buff, which is fine. But the third modifier is Blackout, which is an instant melee kill from enemies.
Uh-huh.
If they melee you, you instantly die.
Oh my god.
No radar, right? So I'm going through one strike with these two randos. We just get matched and we're running through the strike. We're not having, we're all appropriately leveled. We, you know, I have, we've got decent gear. We're getting through the strike. We're not struggle busting it, but we get to the boss and the boss has this AOE effect where it's essentially a melee stomp. He's a Cabal boss, so he has a melee stomp. So
is it the guy with the two swords that goes invisible? Is it that guy?
No, it's not that. But he flies around and he lands in front of you, and you can't jump away fast enough. And his stomp, it's got such a huge AOE that I think we wiped 3 or 4 times.
Oh my god!
And the two randos rage quit. It wasn't like they rage quit at the end of this heroic strike. I was so pissed.
Oh my god!
And I'm like, do I wait here to see if two more guys get matched? I ended up just leaving the strike and not.
Yeah, I mean, if two quit,
but the two randos that I was with quit at the same time.
Oh my god!
After 3 wipes, yeah, and we'd done decent damage on the boss, but though we just couldn't figure out how to stay away from him and do damage, and you know we just hadn't figured out the, you know, kind of the sequence of it to do good damage and stay away and not get killed by his stomp, because it just instantly kills you no matter how close you are to him. It has a large AOE, so. We wiped, and then they rage quit. And I was pissed off because they rage quit or whatever. And I don't really – I mean, it happens. But, I mean, I've been in moments where I was just like, I'm so sick of this. I'm getting my ass kicked. But I just – you gut it out and figure out a way to do it. But these two fuckers rage quit on me last night.
I will comment that Future War Cult won the faction rallies for the first time.
I saw that.
And Chris, like, that was your faction, right? I mean, that was the one
That was my faction. Of course, this time around, I did not pledge to Future War Cult.
Oh, no. Of course they won. Oh, that's funny. This is the first time they won this whole time.
I had 50. I still bought the sidearm that they're selling because I love that thing.
That's awesome. It's
for cool. 50,000 credits.
50,000 credits. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, Andrew.
Sir.
Do you have any trivia for us?
I do have a trivia question for you.
Let's hear it.
Okay. In honor of the fact that the Ant-Man and the Wasp is dropping today.
Yes.
And maybe I'll even go try to see a 9 o'clock show now that we're going to be wrapping this up here in the next couple minutes. Maybe go if I feel it. Okay. Not including Ant-Man and the Wasp. So not including Ant-Man and the Wasp. Okay?
All right.
What is the total running time of the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Whoa!
Okay. Closest without going over.
Are you shitting me?
Are you, I did the by, math. By minutes? Okay. You by minutes?
Minutes or hours or whatever.
Okay.
Closest you can get without going okay. over.
So how many movies are there? There's 20 movies? Is it something like that? And close to 60 minutes or, you know, two hours for each.
So 120 average, minutes per movie.
Right, 120 minutes per times
2400.
2400.
That's for 20.
That's
20
the average,
movies.
I would say. So let's say.
So how many total?
Is it 20 total? Movies? How many is it, Andrew? Can you at least give us
how
that?
How many total movies? Yeah, let me. I got out of the Wikipedia page.
I think it's 20. I think it's.
It's either 19 or 20.
Okay, I'm going to say 2,236 minutes.
I'm going to say 2,512 minutes.
Mm.
Chris was closer, but he went just over.
Oh, okay. Let's hear it.
2,448 minutes.
We were right on with our math though. 2,400
hours and 48 minutes.
40 hours. So I was thinking about something crazy to do. I don't know if I'm going to do this because this sounds insane, but I was thinking about going back and editing each character's arc, like Iron Man, all the scenes that Iron Man's in, all the scenes that like Spider-Man's in. All the scenes that Captain America is in, and doing like a this is the Captain America story. You know, if you were to do like a comic book, this is like this. Like, can you edit all of, like, would it make sense if you did it like that? With you only show the scenes that Captain America is involved in, or like are a part of? I don't know. I thought about that the other day.
That'd
I was
be
like,
a huge undertaking.
A huge undertaking, because it's hours and hours and hours of footage. But like, it'd be really interesting to see whether the story still makes sense for it when you're only showing scenes of his perspective.
True. Yeah.
But I don't know. I thought about that the other day. But there's 20. I mean, we were right on the money though, Christopher, with that 24,000.
It's actually 19 movies.
19
Infinity
movies.
Infinity War is the 19th film. So okay. Ant-Man and the Wasp is the 20th film.
All right. Oh wow.
Yeah.
If you'd like to help Andrew with
great reviews.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It looks fun. It looks fun.
Looks fun.
I mean, I'm curious to see what they're gonna do, because this technically takes place before Infinity War, which is kind of bizarre. Yeah. And I'm curious to see like the tie-ins a little bit, and you know, it looks like a fun superhero movie, so you know, probably be good.
And it's got Evangeline Lilly as the Wasp, and yeah, she's awesome.
Yes, it's true.
I've loved her since Lost.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Mm-hmm. It's true. Everything you're saying. If you'd like to help Andrew with his trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. You should email the show, brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek @twitter.com. Brothers Geek Podcast, Facebook, and brothersgeek.com for all your podcasting needs. Good one, bros.
Well done. #BeCurious.